upstate New Yorkers frequently complain that their interests aren't being representative in state government. A state government with a governor, comptroller, AG, speaker, and Senate majority leader who all come from downstate. Do you agree with these concerns? And as governor, what will you do to make sure the voices of upstaters are heard in Albany? Let's start with Mr. Giambra.
Well, obviously upstate's going to be very important to me, but the whole state is important. And we can't continue this battle between upstate and downstate. It makes no sense. We're all one state. We all have our uniqueness and we have our differences. But upstate needs some special help, but not the corporate welfare that the governor has tried to use, which has been a huge, as I said earlier, public policy failure. We need to get back to basics. Why is government involved in so many different functions? In New York State, the government runs the airports. They run the transit system. Maybe it's time to see if the private sector might be able to do it better. We need to get back to our core competencies, delivering services more cost effectively. We need to look at certain services and see if the private sector might be able to do it better than we can. Those are the kinds of initiatives that we're going to be looking at. We're going to talk about it in this campaign. And again, I'm the only candidate on the stage who's cut taxes and has run as a Republican in a Democratic county and won twice. This election is about who can get elected. I'm tired of coming in second place. When you come in second place, that means you're the first to lose. It's not good enough for me.
Mr. DeFrancesco?
Yes, the numbers are the problem. Obviously, you're going to have more Democrats and downstaters because that's where the bulk of the population is. One way you can help upstate is to elect me. The first Republican upstate in I don't know how many years, meaning upstate, really upstate, not where Pataki was from, really upstate up here. But my concerns are also for the people of New York City. They got the summer from hell last year with the subways. You need leadership that will take care of the entire state. So the way we do that is the numbers are pretty clear. With a big showing upstate and with a 30% showing in the city, you can win this thing. So you want to really be concerned about your people, then you want to change the situation where we finally have a statewide elected official that's from upstate, then elect somebody from upstate. Get the vote out, and we're going to win because we can win, and I'll tell you why if I get another minute or so.
Mr. Holland?
We have to set priorities, and the priority is upstate. The opioid crisis is an example, which is more prominent, more tragic, upstate New York. And we have people, a lot of times young people, dying because of drug addiction and substance abuse. You know, that's a priority. We need a four-pronged approach to attack the opioid crisis. There has to be prevention, there has to be treatment, there has to be enforcement, and there also has to be, and then the fourth one I'll get to momentarily, but it's important to prioritize the opioid crisis, because if you don't set that as a priority, then you don't have the kind of initiative that's going to stop the abuse from taking place with so many people. And also, you have to, and we talked about this before, the spending, you have to spend the money strategically and empower the local groups to have accountability so that there can be the right kind of intervention to stop the problem.
In recent years, New Yorkers have seen a high profile and powerful state politicians charged with crimes and have to leave office under ethical clouds. Shortly after taking office, Governor Cuomo was able to pass ethics reform that established a new watchdog agency, the Joint Commission on Public Ethics, or JCO. Clearly, these reforms have done little to change the ethical culture in Albany. In addition, as we speak, one of the governor's closest friends and advisors, Joe Prococo, is on trial in New York City for his involvement in a bribery and bid rigging scheme. As governor, what will you do to make sure trust is restored in our state government? Let's start with Mr. Holland.
This is the greatest failure, the broken promise. He came into office with, yes, I'm going to make Albany clean it up, you know, make it free of these problems, and it's not only still there, you know, it has gotten worse. You know, it starts with integrity in the governor's office. You know, we don't need, you know, more, you know, commissions. What we need are term limits in Albany. If we had term limits now, this governor, it wouldn't even be a question. Two terms for governor, it's good enough for the president of the United States. It should be good enough for the governor of New York State. You know, to set those term limits, not only for governor, but also for members of the legislature, it has to start with the priority of saying, yeah, career politicians are not what we need in order to turn this ethical problem around. So we set the tone right there at the very beginning, and then the integrity of the office. I mean, it's really important that whoever is governor, you know, I do happen to be an ordained minister, and I've been involved in work in the community. You know, people need to understand that you set the tone, you know, from the top, and then, you know, you can, you know, begin to clean up in a serious way and not continue with the pay-for-play environment.
Mr. DeFrancesco? Mr. DeFrancesco?
Oh, I'm sorry. You know, the best way to clean up government is to elect somebody with some type of integrity, honesty, and an understanding that you have an obligation to the people of the state of New York. And the way you determine that is you look at the record of each of the people that's trying to run for governor and see what the track record is, and then you got a better idea whether you're going to get the right person in the place. You can have all the laws in the world, but if you've got a governor who passes a JCO bill and goes before the cameras preening like he's solved the world's problems, and then on the side he's got his two closest aide hawking for money on every project that he is approving, well, you could put all the laws on the book as you want. Term limits, you know, I'm old enough now it doesn't matter anymore. But as far as term limits are concerned, just think of the term limits. Spitzer, okay, we get a new governor. Patterson, who wasn't, he's a wonderful man, he's a close friend, was only there a short time, and then Cuomo. You got term limits, and you got two crooks out of three. So tell me, that isn't the solution. The solution is being careful as to who the candidate is and making sure you're electing the right people, and I think that's really the answer.
Mr. Giambra?
Yes, the way to clean up the ethics problems in New York State is to follow the money. My friends, the campaign finance laws in New York State need to be changed. It's obscene that this governor was able to amass $30 million. Now, for all you county chairs out there, you know how hard it is to raise money. You don't raise $30 million by accident. It takes a well-orchestrated, well-choreographed, pay-to-play operation, and that's what this governor has done for the last 7 years, and it has to stop. And it starts with campaign finance reform. This governor talks about closing the loophole on LLCs. It is so abusive, it's sickening. The amount of money that can be given to elected officials in New York State, it compromises them and it leads to corruption. So we start with campaign finance reform, and I'm hoping that Senator DeFrancesco will use his leadership skills in the Senate to get the LLC loophole bill out of committee on the floor for a vote. That's where it starts. Let's take the loophole system and do away with it once and for all. We should do it this year in this session.
The governor of New York has tremendous budgetary powers, and Governor Cuomo has been criticized for frequently including non-budget, non-fiscal policy proposals in his state budget. Will you, however, use the budgetary powers of the governor and put a SAFE Act repeal in your first budget and force the legislature to approve a SAFE Act repeal or close down the government? Let's start with Mr. DeFrancesco.
Well, you know, that process is a, you know, you use that system in that way and you get bad legislation. And whether it's the SAFE Act or any other act, if you're holding people up in order to get one piece of legislation done, when you're supposed to be dealing with the financial situation in the state of New York, I think that's bad policy, whether it's the SAFE Act or not. However, I will do everything I can to make certain that the SAFE Act is repealed or the most onerous parts of it are repealed, I voted against it. And it's an act that was done at with the twisting by the governor of several arms, which ended up in a very bad piece of legislation. But to hold the budget hostage for the SAFE Act or anything else that we might want, I think is bad, bad public policy.
Mr. Giambra?
Yes, I would repeal the SAFE Act. I think it was unnecessary and burdensome, and it has not done anything to reduce crime or homicides in the state of New York, to the best of my knowledge. We have to separate public policy from the budget. You can't put public policy initiatives in the budget and use it as leverage to hold people hostage to try to get the budget passed. We should deal with the budget. We should spend all of our time dealing with the structural issues facing New York State and save the public policy issue debates for after the budget. By coupling public policy with the budget, it's caused all kinds of problems, has led to bad public policy, and it needs to stop.
Mr. Holland?
I agree with my fellow candidates. Repeal the SAFE Act, keep budget and public policy safe, separate. But there's a larger issue here. And I go back to the visionary approach here. Government's greatest responsibility is to protect its citizens, is to ensure the safety of its citizens. And we need an approach that looks at violence, particularly gun violence, and drills down into the community, the places where it's most prevalent. And as I said before, you know, it's about grassroots approach rather than big government approach. We have this governor and his liberal party and philosophy focusing on big government instead of grassroots. We need to empower grassroots groups, faith-based groups at the local level to work with those who have, you know, been exposed to, you know, guns and violence at an early age. We have a gun buyback program through my church, and there are other like initiatives that the government needs to get behind to turn it around.
In his most recent budget proposal, Governor Cuomo has included language that would expand abortion rights to include late-term abortions. New York already leads the nation in the number of abortions performed each year. Will you pledge to oppose any bill, budget or non-budgetary, that includes language that could potentially expand abortion rights? Let's start with Mr. Giambra.
Yes, I would oppose it unequivocally.
Mr. Holland.
I am an ordained minister with a biblical worldview, and I do believe that life starts at procreation, that the rights of the unborn need to be protected. And we start with that basic conviction, and from that basic conviction, yes, you know, I would, you know, oppose any kind of legislation, but I think it needs to be done strategically. And so, you know, we also, you know, protecting, you know, those rights. And I look at it as a religious freedom issue, as a freedom of speech issue. You know, those people who, you know, want to, you know, exercise their rights and their voice in protest, you know, against, you know, what's going on. There have been restrictions on those who would, you know, raise up a voice against what's happening in the abortion environment. And so we need to, you know, look at it broadly and protect those rights.
Mr. DeFrancesco?
I don't have to pledge to be against it. I have been against it for several years. Many of you know that the governor was proposing a 10-point women's agenda. And the 10-point women's agenda had 9 incredible points. And one of them was like sex trafficking, equal wages, everything that is good that you could possibly think of. The 10th one was this abortion expansion. This assembly passed it in a minute. The Senate would not pass it for years. And I had women coming to me, the activists, outside of chambers. And I said, what is wrong with you? Why don't you tell this assembly, because we passed the other 9, to pass these great bills for women? You're holding these great bills hostage for a bill that we're not going to pass. And you know what? It worked. It worked. We got those 9 passed after about 3 years, and that expansion bill never happened. This year, the governor wants to oppress his people in the progressive movement. So he puts it in the budget. I will not vote for the budget if that is anywhere near the final version, and I'm sure my colleagues, some of which I see in the audience here, also will not do it either. So I have fought against it. I will continue to fight against it.
Today we were at... Today we are at Damon College. Governor Cuomo's budget proposes the elimination of Bundy aid that directly benefits private colleges like Damon on top of his free tuition. Excelsior scholarship program that has also hurt private schools and disrupted the balance between private and public institutions. Do you support these decisions by the governor? And if not, what would you do to change them? Let's start with Mr. Holland, please.
I am against those decisions by the governor because, you know, it is important, you know, to separate out social policy that, you know, looks to, you know, protect interest groups and the importance of educational opportunity in New York State. I see educational opportunity as the new front, the unfinished business of the civil rights movement. It's only when we can provide a great educational opportunity for the children of our state that they will be able to move forward and pursue the American dream. The immigration, legal immigration issue, I'm against illegal immigration. I am for, immigration. We are a country and a state of immigrants, but it has to be done lawfully. And this governor has decided to take a national issue, a federal issue, because he's more focused on running for president in 2020 than governing New York State right now, to take an issue like the Dreamers and make it into a local agenda. And it's more important that we protect, and as governor, I would protect, you know, the rights of those who need education here in the state and who are here lawfully than those who are here illegally.
Mr. DeFrancesco?
I think the question was about Bundy aid, and which he's eliminating in this budget. And the Bundy aid has been a factor of all budgets that I've been involved with, and it's some aid for private colleges that need help just as much as public colleges do. The problem is even exacerbated because last year with our so-called free college education, many students are leaving the private schools to go to the public schools and finding out that it's really not free. And the SUNY colleges are actually looking for more money to build more buildings, to hire more teachers because there's more people. So how could you possibly poke the private colleges in the eye a second time by saying not only have we taken away some students, but we're also going to take away the little aid, and it's not much, that you're provided in order to make these colleges, private colleges, more affordable. So I'm against it, and I will fight against that action by the governor in his budget proposal.
Mr. Giambra?
Yes, I'm also against eliminating Bundy aid, but I'm also a proponent of vouchers and parental choice. My four kids went to Christian Central Academy, and we paid for that out of our pocket as a family, and it was difficult to do. So I don't think the governor should be using his political concerns and making political decisions as to who the winners and losers are. It goes back to basics. We have somewhere still between a $4 and $8 billion hole in the state budget. So it's easy to stand up here and talk about we're gonna continue to provide more money for this and more money for that. We've got to get back and figure out how we're going to reduce the size and cost of government. But in general, I believe that parents should have a choice, and the voucher system would be very effective in New York State.
Thank you. New York has some of the highest property taxes in the nation. Governor Cuomo has blamed local governments for driving up property taxes by failing to share services. Others have claimed that unfunded state mandates are the real problem. What is your plan to lower property taxes, and what state mandates would you eliminate? Let's start with Mr. DeFrancesco.
Well, the biggest one is the obligation that counties have to pay for Medicaid spending. The state of New York decides all the projects, all the programs, and all the optional services, and who's eligible and who's not, and then they just pass off those expenses to the local governments. That would be the biggest, most effective way to help lower property taxes. In addition, did anybody hear the governor in his budget presentation repeatedly criticize the federal government for limiting the amount of taxes you can, state taxes you can deduct on your federal return? Well, he forgot something. That's how, or he forgot it, or he knew he'd get a big windfall, and he didn't do anything about it. Namely, if we didn't act in the Senate, and hopefully the Assembly will as well, you got to decouple the tax returns for the state government and the federal government, because what happens under this particular budget, what would happen is that you're losing the same deduction that he's crying about, that the federal government made you lose. You're losing as deductions in your state return as well. So, you know what the answer was? Talk about lack of credibility. When we passed that bill in the Senate a couple of weeks ago, the governor said, well, or his governor, no, he doesn't speak, the budget director. The budget director basically said that, you know what happens here? We were going to do it. We didn't think about it. We'll cover it in our 30-day amendments. So that would have been another hidden tax. So those are a couple of ideas to deal with the high property taxes in the state of New York.
Mr. Giambra?
One of the biggest problems, whether you're in Jamestown or Montauk, is the high cost of local government. Local property taxes in New York State are anywhere from 42 to 45% higher than the national average. This is something that I have some expertise in. When I was county executive, we talked about merging and consolidating. Erie County has 47 general purpose governments, 29 school districts, a county government, a city government, 27 towns, 16 villages. That form of governance, unfortunately, exists throughout the entire state of New York. If we're going to get real about reducing local property taxes, it starts with merging and consolidation. And as I said over the years, the most effective way to make changes in the local government delivery structure is from the top down. As governor, I will make it my priority to force local governments to look at better ways to spend your dollars.
Mr. Holland?
As a Republican conservative, I am committed to lower taxes at all levels of government. I agree with what has been said, that the biggest unfunded mandate that needs to be addressed is in the Medicaid area. I also support the tax reform bill that came out of D.C., but it would be important, you know, to fight for deductibility of state and local taxes being restored. The cap just hurt so many New Yorkers, so many New York homeowners, and so we need to fight to have that restored. But once again, with the visionary approach, it needs to be not only in legislation from the bully pulpit of the governor's mansion. We need to make sure that state government, local government reduces taxes across the board.
All right, we're going to start a quick lightning round. So the rules for this are answers must be in a single word. So we're going to take turns going first. Our first question is, do you support term limits? Let's start with Mr. Giambra and then go down.
Yes.
Mr. Dufresne?
No.
Mr. Holland?
Yes.
Do you pledge to support the GOP nominee if it isn't you, Mr. Dufresne?
Absolutely.
Mr. Holland?
Yes.
Mr. Giambra?
Much too early to give you an answer for that.
Do you support public financing of elections? Mr. Holland?
Yes.
Mr. Giambra?
I'm sorry, the question?
Do you support public financing of elections?
Yes.
Mr. DeFrancesco?
Absolutely not.
Do you... Mr. Holland? Do you support public financing of elections? Oh, yeah, sorry. Do you support public financing for a new Bills stadium? Let's go to Mr. Giambra.
Absolutely not. The taxpayer.
One more.
Absolutely not.
Mr. DeFrancesco.
No.
Mr. Holland.
No.
Jets, Giants, or Bills, Mr. DeFrancesco?
Bills.
Good answer. Mr. Holland.
Jets.
Whoa.
Mr. Giambra.
Dub Bills.
Sabres, Islanders, or Rangers? Mr. Holland.
Sabres.
Mr. Giambra.
The way they're playing, the Rangers.
Sabres.
Do you believe the SAFE Act is unconstitutional, Mr. Holland?
Yes.
Mr. Giambra.
Yes.
Mr. DeFrant.
Yes.
Have you ever made a campaign donation to a Democrat, Mr. DeFrancesco?
No.
Mr. Holland?
No.
Yes.
Have you ever voted for or proposed a tax increase, Mr. Holland?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that,
please? Yep. Have you ever voted or proposed a tax increase?
No.
Mr. Giambra?
Yes.
Mr. DeFrant?
Yes.
Will you pledge not to raise taxes as governor, Mr. Giambra?
Yes.
Mr. DeFrant, let's go.
Maybe.
Mr. Holland?
Yes.
Do you support lifting a ban on hydrofracking, Mr. Giambra?
Absolutely.
Mr. DeFrant?
Yes.
Mr. Holland?
Yes.
Is legislation to change Tide Pods ridiculous, Mr. Holland?
I'm sorry, could you repeat?
Sure. Is legislation to change Tide Pods ridiculous?
Yes.
Mr. Giambra?
Yes.
Mr. DeFrant?
Yes.
New York is the only state that applies strict liability to property owners and contractors when workers suffer elevation-related injuries, commonly known as the scaffold law. The provision makes insurance prohibitively expensive and ultimately drives up the cost of construction. Do you support reforming the scaffold law? You can give now back to our original timed questions, a 90-second response and 60-second rebuttals. Let's start with Mr. Giambra.
Unequivocally, the scaffold law has been a huge problem, not only for businesses, but I've talked to labor union leaders who want to join with me in my call to reform the scaffold law. They realize that it's been very injurious to the financial well-being of businesses across the state. It has to be changed, it has to be modified, and I look forward to working with business and labor to get it done.
Mr. Holland.
Yes, I agree with reforming the scaffold law. I know and have spoken to contractors who have had to do all kinds of manipulation in order to address this overregulation. It's an example of the overregulation that, you know, plagues our state government, and it would be a good place to start in turning the tide on that.
Mr. DeFrancesco.
Yes, I support reforming it. Let me just explain what it is for those people who don't live in Albany. Scaffold law basically is about liability for damages for workplace accidents. In every other type of accident situation, somebody may be negligent, and they should be responsible. The person who's hurt may be negligent, and the rules are generally comparative negligence. So if the person hurt is 50% negligent, that 50% is taken off whatever recovery should be made because that person is partially responsible. Under the scaffold law, it's absolute liability. Even if the contractor has absolutely no responsibility, didn't do anything wrong. Some cases, people are hurt while drunk on the job. They have to pay. That increases liability insurance. That's wrong. And we have the author of the bill to repeat the scaffold law in the audience today. Pat Gallivan in the background, and I'm going to support his bill.
So we have one last question, then we'll move to closing statements. The governor has proposed several criminal justice reforms, including the elimination of bail for misdemeanors and nonviolent felonies, expanded access to discovery, free college tuition for inmates, and most recently, free tablets for inmates. How would your philosophy differ for Governor Cuomo's? Let's start with Mr. Holland.
It is important to abide in the dichotomy here between violent offenders and nonviolent offenders. I do believe that there is a group of nonviolent offenders, particularly drug offenders, who could benefit from a different approach, one that focused on rehabilitation, treatment, as well as preparing them with academic and life skills for their return to society. The focus needs to be there and not on all kinds of various offerings that cost the state money. So I've been involved myself in life skills training for returning citizens, where we look at what are those skills that they need in order to avoid recidivism and to be able to hold down a job in their community, stay away from the kinds of temptations and associations that would drive them, back to incarceration, and to be productive citizens. We need to work with local communities, empower grassroots groups, so that when these returning citizens do come back to their communities, they have the support that they need in order to make it.
Mr. DeFrancesco?
I think the question was on the bail reforms, discovery reforms, and also free tablets for the prisoners. As far as the bail reform, right now judges have discretion as to what bail is being set at, basically based upon the type of crime, the likelihood to flee, and so forth. To turn it around so certain crimes have to go, the individual can be released without bail just because it's this type of crime, there may be other factors that would require that person to pay a bond to get them back. So I'm against it. Discovery is basically, you got to give certain information to people that are involved in a crime. The defendants have to get information in order to defend themselves. So some of what he says makes sense. I got a different approach, and that is a prosecutorial conduct bill, which would at least have a review of prosecutors when they're not doing what they should be doing, so there is some accountability. Free tablets, until we provide every kid in high school with a free tablet, I'm not willing to provide prisoners. We got to rehabilitate prisoners, but we don't have to put them in a better situation than people who are out of jail.
Mr. Giambra?
Yes. I agree with Joe. You have to make a distinction between a hardened criminal and somebody who made a mistake in their life. There are, unfortunately, a lot of young Hispanics and African Americans who are in jail today because they can't make bail. And it's unconscionable to think that they're there because of a misdemeanor and they're waiting for the court system to catch up. And I've heard stories about young kids being in jail for 2 and 3 years. That doesn't make any sense. We're wasting a whole lot of money. So we've got to figure out why the criminal justice system does not move as quick as it should. And in regards to the tablets, those of you who know, I resigned from my job about 2 months ago, and I'm unemployed, and I'm trying to figure out how to buy a tablet for my granddaughter, who's 3 years old. So I certainly don't think we should be providing prisoners with tabloids.
Thank you. Now we're going to move to closing statements. You have 90 seconds, a random draw. Number one is going to be Mr. DeFrancesco.
Well, thank you again, Nick, for this opportunity, and thank the moderator for her good work here. It's amazing. I wish my parents were alive to see me here running for governor. My father was a house painter, and I worked for him in the summer times. Until I was a senior in college, to make sure I got through college, he'd let me scrape wallpaper off of walls during the summer. If you've ever done that, it's an exciting thing. But if he could actually, and my mother can actually see me now, he never got out of high school, they'd be so proud. And that's where I come from, and that's who I want to help. I don't want to help the Prococos of the world. I don't want to have special deals for someone who's building a factory that's empty. We need a fundamental change where people with integrity are running government, and that's what I hope to do. Policies have to change. You can't spend like drunken sailors. You have to be able, just like a family, if you don't have the money, you don't raise revenue enhancers, or taxes and fees like the governor wants. You got to cut. You got to look at each of these areas, even the tough ones, and run the system better than you're running it now. Because you know what happens if we don't? If we don't, we're going to accelerate the exodus from the state of New York, and all those who want all of these wonderful things for everyone are not going to have any money to pay anything to even those who have the most need. So, fundamental change. I can win this race. I know I'm going to win this race. I would greatly appreciate the support of the Republican and Conservative parties.
Mr. Holland?
This is Black History Month, so the words of Langston Hughes are appropriate. What happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun, or fester like a sore and then run? Does it stink like rotten meat, or crust or sugar over like syrupy sweet? Maybe it just sags like a heavy load, or does it explode? There are too many deferred dreams, too many broken dreams, too many lost dreams among the citizens of New York State. And I am the candidate who can bring those dreams back to reality within reach. It's a different kind of message. It's a different kind of vision. It's a different kind of hope that I can represent as a candidate for governor. And it's also important to take a different approach as Republican and conservatives. The last gubernatorial election we won was in 2002. I am the candidate with a unique profile that can shift the paradigm here and bring the kind of leadership that can draw the votes from downstate and upstate. Holland Stadium in Auburn, New York, after my family, can help with the kind of profile upstate. The work that I've done in the community of Harlem can help with driving the votes downstate. It's important for me to be at the top of the ticket, not only to beat Andrew Cuomo, but also to help others on the ticket as well. I appreciate the opportunity and look forward to your support.
Mr. Giambra?
I appreciate this opportunity to have a thoughtful discussion about the very important issues that are affecting each and every citizen of the state of New York. Albert Einstein said that the problems we face today cannot be solved at the same level of thinking we were at when we created them. New York State needs leadership. New York State needs a proven leader like me who's cut taxes, who understands the needs to reduce the size and cost of government. New York State needs a leader with vision. New York State needs a leader who will stand up and say, we have to have the courage to say that the way we've been doing it doesn't work, and we must try something different. And that's the same thing with this election, ladies and gentlemen. I think that I'm the only candidate who has a chance to win. This election is about winning, not coming in second. We need to have a new playbook. The playbook that we've been using for the last 12 years, the last three election cycles, has not worked. We need to change the playbook. We need to change the message. That will produce different outcomes. As I mentioned to you earlier, I'm a product of public housing. With your support and your help, you'll give me a chance to live in public housing one more time.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you so much. Let's give a round of applause for Joe Holland. For Senator John DeFrancisco. And for Joel Giambra. And for our great moderator, Andrea Bozek, thank you so much. What a great debate covering real issues of substance across our state. I want to welcome just a few other folks that have joined us. We have the brand new Niagara County Republican Chairman, Adam Vandermark. Thank you. The New York Republican State Committee woman from Wyoming County, Ellen Grant. Thank you for being here. We also are joined by Assemblyman Ray Walter, New York State Senator Mike Ranzenhofer, New York State Senator Pat Galvin, and New York State Senator Chris Jacobs, as well as Erie County Legislator Ed Rath, I see back there. Thank you all for being part of this historic event. We have a lot of decisions ahead of us. We have a lot more information to consider about our candidates, and we look forward to seeing a lot more of them on the campaign trail as we go to both our federal convention in March in Saratoga Springs, as well as our New York State, New York City-based convention coming in late May. So we have a lot of decisions ahead of the party, but this was an excellent opportunity to hear the ideas, the thoughts, and the direction to go win this election. Thank you very much.